The game is over. Your Bucks postgame show starts now. Welcome to Bucks Talk. Insight, analysis, and your chance to sound off on the game you just heard. Now to break it all down, here's your host, Justin Garcia.
A very much needed win for the Bucks, who snap a two-game losing streak. They avoid their first three-game skid in what would have been the first time since games 3 through 5 in the first round of the playoffs a season ago against the Miami Heat. If you go back to the regular season, the last time the Bucks had a three-game skid was late December of 2022, when they actually lost 4 in a row, and the fourth and final loss was maybe the low point up until the playoffs, the low point of the season for the Bucks when they let that one slip away, a disastrous ending in Chicago where the Bucks watched a 20-point lead late in the fourth quarter evaporate, ultimately losing in overtime. But you're able to avoid all of that. You win a game. You felt like you were going to win or should have won coming in. And look, it's not to say that there was not things that the Bucks need to address and clean up here. Malik Beasley said it himself after the game when talking with Dave Kane of, we got to get better defensively. We got some areas we need to improve on the defensive end. I'd like to see that start to take a step forward. And as Bees said too, I'd like to start blowing teams out. That we started to see that for the Bucks. Now you've had a couple of these close ones in recent games, but this one goes the Bucks' way. And give credit to the Spurs. By record, they are not a good team this season. You can certainly see, if this was your first time watching a Victor Wembanyama game and you had no idea what the appeal was for Wemby coming in, you can certainly see all the hype surrounding Wemby, and rightfully so, as he and Giannis went toe-to-toe down the stretch of this one. Included Wemby blocking Giannis on a dunk attempt late in the game that would have extended the Bucks' lead to 5. He had 5 blocked shots. He was incredible. Devin Vassell had a big game, but the Bucks had answers in the fourth quarter, and the Spurs, by record, are not a good team. Spurs played very well tonight, and as I said at the top, it's not to say, hey, the Bucks played really well. I think overall they did play well. There were some small things to clean up that came on the defensive end. But this was a well-played game for both teams, and we heard that from Adrian Griffin. It was a fun game to be a part of. And look, it's fun because the Bucks won. If you lose this game, nobody's calling this a fun one. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's kick things off with Will I Am in Milwaukee. What's going on tonight, Will?
Hey, Justin. Hey, man. To you and the crew, Happy New Year. Hope you had a wonderful holiday. But, man, we needed this bounce back win. And on TNT, you know, because I'm not trying to hear this in the media for 3 days, how our team is a disaster, yada, yada, yada. I don't need that. I was just impressed that Giannis came to ball on national television like he always does. Unfortunately, like I've told you every year, every call that I've had this year, every team seems to be gunning at for us and shooting lights out. And like you said, the Spurs hung around that game. Like you said, Wemby challenging Giannis. You know, it came down to the wire, and I'm really happy that we did pull out that big win. And to kind of tag on your point here about the improvement piece, I've said this for a while. I feel like we don't crash the defensive boards hard enough. I feel like we could do just a little bit harder. And I think it's been a little too common to see the putback dunk with everyone staring and watching. And I don't know. I mean, we got people that are 7 foot. That should be our goal. And I know that we will improve on defense. I know we will. I just wonder, do you think that now, after this win, we're going to emphasize more of the defensive rebounding and more defensive schemes since these games are getting way too close?
So,
what do you think, Justin?
We talked about it a little bit last night in that I agree with you that defensive rebounding, to me, a lot of the struggles defensively, it boils down to the Bucks' poor play on the defensive glass. They have not been a good defensive rebounding team for the last 5 years. they're in the top five every single year. Defensive rebounding, total rebounding. Hasn't been the case this year. And I think part of that, we saw again tonight, is, you know, think about how many possessions. And let's just start with this part. We knew coming into the season, the way Adrian Griffin envisioned this defense was a very aggressive style defense. It was going to pressure ball handlers. It was going to create turnovers and jumpstart the offense by getting into transition. And as we talked about at length last night, that system makes more sense when you have Drew Holiday. I think it's become pretty clear the Bucks don't have the personnel for that type of system. And a lot of us questioned that coming into the season. Even if you had Drew Holiday, that's one player that can really do that, and you would think excel playing that style, but that may be it for the Bucks. Bobby Portis can show a little bit more on the pick and roll and contest on the perimeter at times. We've seen that lead to some steals for Bobby, but they don't have the right personnel to do that top to bottom. And tonight was another game where we just continued to see the Bucks playing out there on the perimeter, challenging out there, trying to force some turnovers. And I mentioned the defensive rebounding is kind of the root of everything, because when you're not getting the defensive boards, you're leaving yourself vulnerable to second chance points. We've seen points in the paint skyrocket, especially in the last four of the last five games. I mean, the Spurs still had 50 plus today, higher than their season average. I think it was 54. You're giving up points in the paint. You're giving up those second chance points. Sometimes it isn't just putbacks. Sometimes it's three pointers. But you're allowing the opponent to extend possessions. And if we've learned anything the last 5-6 years, especially in this league with the advent of or the influx of analytics, it's value for possessions, especially when you have a good or great, potentially in the case of the Bucks, efficient offense. You should value your possessions, and you should try to increase your possessions. So if you're giving the opponent more possessions, that's the name of the game. You want as many possessions as you can. That's why we've seen so many quick shots. And, you know, back in the day, the Phoenix Suns were the pioneer of it, and they were the lone team in the 7 seconds or less offense. We thought it was crazy. Why aren't you taking more time and allowing to get into your sets and getting across half court, getting things set, move the ball around? And now that's not the case. You want some quick shots, good shots, but you want quick shots because it gives you more chances at getting more and more possessions. And that's a long story short to say the Bucks are giving opponents more possessions because the opponent has been doing a very good job offensive rebounding because of the Bucks' lack of defensive rebounding. So I think it ties into the way that you're playing defensively. If you're playing further out on the perimeter, and to your point about the putbacks that we've seen, if you're pressuring the ball or attempting to pressure the ball, because the other thing that we pointed out last night, and we saw it again tonight, if we're just looking at live ball turnovers that you're causing, it's not working. The Bucks, in terms of turnover rate, possessions, percentage of possessions that end in a turnover, offensively, the Bucks have been good. They have limited their turnovers in that regard. Defensively, they have been bad. They are not forcing opponent turnovers and those live ball turnovers that lead to transition. So when this is the case, and when you're bringing your defenders further away from the basket and playing on the perimeter, you're not getting those steals that this defense was conceptualized to create. It's leading to players getting past that first point of attack, getting downhill, challenging Brook Lopez, or not, that there's nobody there to contest that shot, and getting open looks at the rim. It's become a layup line of sorts that we've seen against this defense in recent weeks. And that's been the big problem, is I think not only defensive rebounding, to your point of crashing there, you got to do a better job on the defensive glass. I think it starts with maybe reexamining this defense and saying, okay, we pushed Brook further back and put him back in the drop. Maybe we need to do that with the rest of our personnel as well, because we're getting hammered on the glass. We're giving up too many second chance points. And the flip side of that is, you know, I mentioned this last night as well, but I really do think to that point of put a greater emphasis on possessions and getting more of them, and especially the Bucks, where we've seen their offensive efficiency, and they've routinely been a top three offense in the league this season, that it may have to be a stance, at least until you get fully healthy and you get Jay Crowder back. Maybe there's some other moves that the Bucks make around the trade deadline, but until all that falls into play or into place, your offense may be your best defense. In other words, if we also crash the offensive boards, we're giving our offense, which is very good, one of the best in the league, we're giving them more cracks at it, more possessions. We're taking away possessions from the opponent and not putting our defense in those vulnerable spots. And the fear of, well, if you crash the offensive glass, you're left in a vulnerable spot in transition defense. I get that. I would also counter with, you know, we've seen this transition defense be very porous for large stretches of the season when they're not crashing the offensive glass, when they're theoretically getting back in transition and they still haven't been able to contain. But the other part of it is, and I think some coaches will tell you this as well, that, you know, the fear of if we crash the offensive boards, we're leaving ourselves open for transition defense and scoring from the opponent there. There is a part of you that also wonders, well, if you crash the offensive boards, are you somewhat taking away, not to say you're eliminating it, but are you at least minimizing transition offense from the opponent? Because if you're going after the glass, they have to get back there and put a body. At least one guy is going to go and contest you. That it's not going to be just five guys sprinting down the floor and you had two guys that crashed the offensive glass. So it's a long story short to say I agree they have to do a better job on the defensive glass. It's not so much crashing the boards on the defensive end. I think it really starts with where they're setting up defensively and maybe reexamining that. I do think at this point you just have to say, you know what, we'll take our chances and we're gonna gamble that our transition defense can't be much worse. We're gonna crash the offensive boards too.
Agreed. I can't agree with you more there. It's hard to put yourself in a position like that because, again, this year we've seen a lot of the first step blow-bys, which lead to these floaters or these wide open corner threes or even these just fast-paced dunks. And when you just expose yourself, like you're saying, just a little bit, they kind of know where our weakness is. And I've always said, you know, obviously crashing the boards, but even if we do have a little bit more aggressive first step, I know there have been really tic-tacky fouls when we do try to put our hands on defenders, even if we do try to square them up. But like you said, it's a possession-to-possession game, and sometimes I feel that we give the opposing team just almost walk into and ones. And when you're talking to, you know, possession per possession, where it was deadlocked at rebounding for 42 apiece tonight, and we give someone an and one to get that game, you know, tied or within one, I feel like we got to at least try to make sure they earn it from the line to compensate just in case. Because like you said, either way, you're kind of vulnerable. But at the same time, you know, they better earn those free throws if we're going possession per possession.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Will. And the big one, I think it was Devin Vassell. I can't remember who the wing player was. I think it was Vassell that had that shot late. He missed. He knew it was off, and he immediately crashed the glass because, as we've seen so often, it's just Brook Lopez that's back there in the paint. And again, those plays where Brook Lopez is going to contest a shot, if he goes to contest the block and it pulls him a little bit away from the rim, you're wide open for offensive putbacks. And we've seen far, far, far too much of that so far this season. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talking text line. A few more calls coming into. We will get to those after this on Bucks Talk. It was a fun, entertaining, exciting, whatever word you want to use to describe what we saw tonight. We're only using those words because the Bucks won. But nonetheless, it was a nice win for the Bucks. And I know the Spurs, by record, are not a good team. But we saw another game where the Bucks played well enough down the stretch. And it was, I do think, for as many areas as there are to clean up for this team, especially on the defensive end, I do really think tonight was more a case of the Spurs playing well versus the Bucks playing poorly. 855-616-1620 is the Old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines and catch up with Dick in Port Washington. How's it going tonight, Dick?
Well, we won. But I think you can look at it from two different ways. Is one, a team that has championship aspirations should win a game like this. Another way to look at it is we didn't deserve to win. And my trouble is I don't know which one it is. Other years, I think you could. I mean, I remember back, was it last year or 2 years ago, we stunk up Houston really bad. And, you know, then we came out, and I think we had a stretch of three or four great wins. The rotations tonight seem somewhat unusual to me. For one thing, I don't understand, when we have two superstars, why isn't one of them always on the court? You know, when you look back in the old days, you know, it was either Jordan or Pippen on the floor at all times when they needed a blow. We don't always do that. We end up with strange alignments out there. But my question to you right now is he trying to, I shouldn't say he, is the coaching staff trying to come up with a way to play better defense with different combinations? Because there were just some, I mean, maybe you don't think there were different strange combinations out there. It seemed that way to me. But is he trying to improve the defense?
So that part, just in regard to the way they used players tonight, are you saying?
Yeah, tonight. I mean, if you listen to any of the national shows today, from Wilbon to Stephen A. to guys I never heard of, that they're saying that there's no way the Bucks are even a top six team with the defense we have. And you keep bringing it up. I keep bringing it up. Everybody keeps bringing it up. And our coaching staff has to come up with something. So my question is these different combinations out there, is that what they're trying to do? Trying to figure out something? And why are we at times out there without one of our two superstars out there?
So
that's my question to you.
The second part is the easier one to answer, and thanks for the call, Dick. So with Damian Lillard playing all of the first and third quarter, it presents the challenge there, because Giannis doesn't play all of the first and third quarter, but he plays a lot of it. So if we look at quarter one, Giannis played about 9 minutes in that first quarter, which leads to that small gap in the second quarter where Giannis will still play around the same amount of minutes, but you'll have usually a minute or two, a couple of minutes where Giannis is not on the floor. And Damian Lillard isn't playing until around the six-minute mark in that second quarter. So you run into those spots in the second and fourth quarter usually. I don't necessarily disagree. I would also like to see one of those two guys on the floor at all times. It was much less noticeable in the second quarter because you had Chris Middleton out there. And the way we have seen Adrian Griffin run his rotations is Chris is the guy that's out there when Giannis and Dame are not. That you'll stagger it in that sense of, well, we've at least got Chris to help facilitate the offense and be the scorer. And that's worked pretty well. It was a little more challenging in the second half. Giannis did play most of his minutes in the second half versus the first, but it was a little more challenging there because Chris didn't play in the second half. So I think once we see, and we've seen it for, about a week now, that Chris has routinely been at about 32 minutes. Tonight was the first night, by the way, that Chris played on both ends of the back-to-back. So as we see more of that and as more time passes, I think it's going to be less of an issue with those rotations. But, you know, once we get to the playoffs, I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of it. But in terms of the second question of, is he Is he just trying to find combinations that work? Again, the Chris Middleton part, it did play somewhat of a role. He did kind of talk about this a little bit on the post game when he had mentioned specifically in filling those Chris Middleton minutes in the second half, it really came down to Andre Jackson Jr. and Pat Connaughton in trying to figure out who works best in these spots. In terms of who's going to start for Chris in the third quarter, we wanted to get off to a fast start. He didn't say this, but if you read between the lines, it's I trust Pat Connaughton a lot more than I trust a rookie, so Pat Connaughton is going to be the first one to get a crack at it. And just trying to find the minutes where to use him. And I think we've heard Adrian Griffin say this a couple of times of, I got to find ways to get Andre Jackson Jr. out there. I think that's still the thing that he's grappling with, and that would kind of lend to the trying to figure out what works for the playoffs is the energy that he brings. And the fact that it's painfully obvious, and this doesn't really say as much about Andre as it does about the rest of the Bucks' perimeter defenders, but it's pretty clear Andre Jackson Jr. is the Bucks' best perimeter defender as it stands right now. So I do think what we've heard from Griff throughout the course of the last couple of weeks is this recognition of I gotta find ways to weave him in and where it makes more sense to get him out there. So I'm sure that was a part of it tonight. But I think the big thing is I just get a feeling that once we get to the homestand next week is when we'll be close, if not at the point where you have a lot more assets available. One of the questions that came in about Jay Crowder on the text line, 855-616-1620 is that number to join us on the text line. How many more months before Crowder comes back? Hopefully, when the playoff seeds come out, we don't get stuck with the Pacers. So we don't know the last time the Bucks were home. It was asked of Adrian Griffin of, you know, how close is Jay Crowder to returning? And we were told he's progressing well, but no timeline that we were given. So we mentioned this last night as well. I think it was November 11th, something like that, when we got the official press release that Jay Crowder is out and he had this surgery on his adductor, 6 to 8 week timeline. Monday, this upcoming Monday, January 8th, that is 8 weeks from the time of that announcement of the injury. Monday starts a 4-game homestand. It's basically for the week. So you got Monday against the Jazz, then a huge one, Thursday against the Celtics, and then a Saturday, Sunday back-to-back with the Warriors and Kings. If it is, in fact, an 8-week timeline, you're going to see, you would assume, Jay Crowder at some point next week. But as we've kind of cautioned, I don't think at this point you should assume we're going to see Jay Crowder Monday and he's going to play 25 or 30 minutes. It's going to be an onboarding process. It's going to be an on-ramp for him. But getting Jay Crowder back is going to solve a lot of that as well. Again, it's not the ultimate fix, but it's going to help you out in some areas where we've seen, not frequently, but a couple of times. And frankly, I wondered if we would see it tonight. I think the absence of Chris Middleton may have been the biggest deterrent. But the Pacers games, when the Bucks had to play smaller and we didn't see Brook Lopez late, we saw a lot more of that earlier in the season too. That's when you had Jay Crowder, and that's when it was more apt to be able to play smaller. Because I think any coach will tell you, and Eric Spoelstra talked about this at length a year ago in an interview he did in a Q&A session for NBA.com about how to effectively defend pick and rolls, that so much of this league has become pick and roll, that you go back even 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you think about the number of actions that were run out of post-ups, and you would see maybe 10 screens and pick and rolls per game, and how much that is flipped now. And the big thing is we saw drop defense as the first that was put up there of here's how you combat the pick and roll. And now as we've seen more and more versatility in the league, that what the number one thing to take down the drop defense, if you have ball handlers all across the floor and you got guys that excel in the mid-range, you're going to get to that spot and you're going to score. The big thing is you need versatility. You need fives, bigs that can switch And that's why Miami has been so good defensively. You think about Bam Adebayo and his ability to switch onto the perimeter. Giannis is the closest the Bucks have to that. And it works when you play Giannis at the five, when you have a four that can defend multiple positions. 2021, 3 years ago, when the Bucks won the title, PJ Tucker. Earlier this season, it was Jay Crowder as your small ball four that can switch around. He can take on some wings. He can defend the fours. It works when you have that paired up to your mobile five. Bucks haven't had that because of the way the roster is constructed. Bobby Portis can switch somewhat, but Bobby Portis, that's not his ideal spot. So I do wonder, to the larger point or question that Dick brought up of looking for things to do in the playoffs, if we start to see more of that, if it's Monday, if it's Thursday, whenever it is, sometime next week, if it's after that, whenever Jay Crowder makes his return. 855-616-1620, the number to join us here, the Old National Bank talk and text line. A few more texts to get to, a few more calls to get to as well. We'll get to those after this on Bucks Talk.
Texas, the sage in bloom.
Bucks take down the Spurs tonight in our first glimpse of Victor Wembanyama versus Giannis, and it lived up to the expectations, maybe even exceeded it. Giannis with a huge game tonight, as I suppose we didn't even get to that stat line for Giannis, but he did everything for the Bucks. 14 points in the fourth quarter, 44 points total, 14 rebounds, 7 assists, a block, 2 steals. In his second performance now in the month of January, but the first since being named the Eastern Conference Player of the Month for December. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Let's head back to the phone lines and catch up with Justin in North Carolina.
Hey, what's up, Justin? Much better night tonight. You know, I thought Will I Am and Dick made some great points, man. I think one of the things we always got to remember as Bucks fans, though, is kind of talked about a little bit last night, that we're not the car, the Lamborghini, that's going to go 0 to 60 right off the block, and that's where we're going to be. We're a pace car. We're slowly picking up our pace, and we're starting to get into that third and fourth gear, and we're getting it. Now, tonight, you know, a lot of sloppy play in the first half, a lot of things, like you said, that we need to clean up, and like Dave said, we need to clean up as well. Definitely agree with that. But I really was impressed with Dame Lillard tonight, right? We know Giannis is a freak of nature, and he took it at the kid. And, I mean, that dude is amazing. That block on Giannis, I've never seen a block like that ever on Giannis. That just pure athletic play. He's a big guy. But Dame was pretty horrible first quarter and a half, maybe, 65% of the game. Then he started going to the basket. Let me get myself going. Let me figure out how to get going. And finished with, I believe, 25.
Yep.
That's good for an off night. So the other thing that I caution a lot of our Bucks fans on is that, you know, as far as, oh, we only beat the San Antonio Spurs by 4 or 5 or whatever it was. The Hall of Fame Packer, Leroy Butler, said those guys get paid too, and that always sticks with me. And that San Antonio team has quite a bit of young talent, and you got to remember, they're seeing Giannis and they're seeing Dame. So we know Denver is the reigning champs, but everyone's looking at us like we're the team to beat in the entire NBA. So we're going to get those sometime. So I think, and to summarize everything, all this is getting us prepared for May in June basketball, and hopefully a parade in June.
They have quite a bit of young talent, and they have, most importantly, the guy that is clearly going to be the best or second best player in the league in, I don't want to put a number on it, maybe 5 or 6 years. Like, it's pretty clear what we've seen so far this season. It seems like it's going to be, once we get to, hopefully not anytime soon, but once you get into the twilight of Giannis's time and all the other young players, we're starting to get to that point with some of the guys like Kevin Durant and LeBron James is there now. But once we get into that next generation, it seems like it's pretty clearly Victor Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren at the top of that list.
Yeah. I would agree with you with that, but the thing is, once you're only going to put those guys at that list and make them there, he didn't have that work ethic like Giannis did. Yep. Because both of those young guys need a lot of weight right now.
Yep.
And I think you saw it with Brooke in the first half. He kind of gave him a little elbow and got him out the way. Giannis got him out the way. The kid is just so long, though, Justin. Like, he gets him out the way, and he still blocks a dunk.
Yeah.
And we all know, as Bucks fans, that's not a light dunk coming down. So I think that, thank God, Tyus Jones finally didn't screw the state of Wisconsin and he missed that three at the end of the game. But I was just like, God, anybody but him. All those old dookies that, you know, well, never mind. We don't got to get to his Bucks. But you got my point, though, buddy.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Justin. I think that block by Wemby and Giannis, give Wemby credit, because Giannis put his full brute force into him to clear out some space. I think what kind of hurt Giannis there was he went up with the left hand, and that was closest to Wemby. If he would have positioned his body a little bit different and went up with his strong hand and used the rim a little more to shield him, doesn't happen. But still, how many players? I know Jonathan Isaac blocked Giannis multiple times in a game already this season, but how many times have we seen that, where you just easily contest and take down a shot like that on Giannis? And Justin brings up that last shot that Tyus Jones missed. I do want to get to that, because we heard some interesting things from Adrian Griffin after the game. Before we do get to that, let's grab one more call here. Matt in Milwaukee, you're up next.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Very good. Hey, I saw the stat line, and every time I see Giannis with about 40, 38 points, that means it's a pretty tough win normally a lot of times. But I kind of agree with the last caller. I mean, Dame's kind of turned that corner there, and I think you see that nice dunk he had against Indiana in the second half of the other week, day. And I think this guy really need to figure out how to get him going more. But I think it's kind of been a tough transition for him, because with the divorce and everything, I think he's just going to take a little bit of time to figure out where he's going to fit into the offense and everything a little bit better. But you really need to figure that out.
Yeah, and thanks for the call, Matt. It's been a tough – look, it's everything that's on there, everything going on off the court to uproot, move from Portland to the Midwest, to Milwaukee, and do that – with a week before training camp begins, figure out, where am I going to live? What am I going to do with my family here? Adjust to new teammates and a new system. And you thought you were going to have the guy that ran the offense for the majority of your time in Portland there. That changes right as the regular season starting. So it's been a lot for Damian Lillard to adjust to, but we're seeing those signs of that chemistry really starting to develop. But I think the big thing is, nine times this season that Damian Lillard has scored in double figures in the fourth quarter. You think back to opening night, when he had that incredible performance in the fourth against the Sixers that carried the Bucks to the win. He did the same thing against the Knicks just after that. The Heat game as well. We've seen it a number of times, and the Bucks are 8-1 in those games where Dame scores 10 or more in the fourth quarter. That's basically what you brought him here for. He creates the space for Giannis. He can knock down shots. We've seen more consistent shooting overall since the first three or so weeks of the season. I know he'd been going through some shooting struggles the last few games, but he's been much more consistent of late. But that's the big thing. He's going to create the space. He is a playmaker and facilitator, as we saw another double-double with 10 assists tonight. But to have that guy in the fourth quarter that can get to the free throw line, that can hit free throws, and can hit tough shots too, because that's the gamble the Bucks have made. You've changed to an offensive team to say, we need to be able to score in these playoff games, and we couldn't really do that before. And Damian Lillard is a big piece of that. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and text line to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I referenced that final play, the Tyus Jones three-point attempt. We'll take a look back at the scenario and what we heard from Adrian Griffin after the game, how similar it was to one game earlier this season, and how the Bucks were able to escape despite what may have been a breakdown defensively. We'll get into it after this on Bucks Talk.
To Wembanyama. They'll get it to the corner. The three for the tie. Jones couldn't hit it. It goes caroming out of bounds. Bucks basketball with 1.8 seconds to go. in a standing room only house, all on its feet. The air goes out of the building like a air going out of a balloon on that missed shot. It was a clean look.
It was a clean look for with about a second and a half left on the game clock after that miss. But Trey Jones got as good of a look as you could have asked for in the corner for what would have been the game-tying three-pointer. Spurs had the ball with 16 and a half seconds left. This after Giannis's missed dunk on that Wemby block that would have made it a five-point game and basically sealed it for the Bucks. 16 and a half seconds left. And the Bucks, again, that defense we talked about earlier in the show, they were pressuring the ball. 16 and a half seconds. We heard from Adrian Griffin a couple of weeks ago when the Bucks played the Bulls. They did not foul. Alex Caruso hits a three-pointer. Bulls tie it. They ultimately win it in overtime. And we heard Adrian Griffin talk about that last play, or forced overtime. We heard Griffin talk about that last play in that he had instructed, if you get the opportunity, foul. If their back is to the basket, if they're not clearly in the act of a shot, then foul. But once you get to 5 seconds, I think was the timeline he gave, that's when it gets tough. Because that's when you do run the risk of fouling and it's an attempted three and you're sending him to the line for three shots to tie the game. Bucks didn't do it. They didn't execute. It did appear as though they had some opportunities to foul, certainly when Nikola Vucevic caught the ball with his back turned to the basket. But nonetheless, you kind of wondered, I wonder what they'll do here. And 16 and a half seconds, you know, as Griff talked about before, maybe it was a little too less amount of time on the clock to consider it. 16 and a half is kind of in the other direction where it's, there's still time. 10 seconds is really the ideal amount of time. Because when you're closer to 20, then it still becomes, well, now we're playing the foul game. If we foul, we send them to the line, they're going to foul us, and you're extending the game. But once you get to 10 seconds or lower, then it's take a second or two off the clock if they miss. If we can burn off some time when we inbound it, then you're basically running out the clock. But we heard from Adrian Griffin after the game, that final possession. And I'm going to try to find the quote in the transcription I took, but it was basically plan in the huddle was to foul after 10 seconds, not give up the three. It was happening fast. We probably forgot, but we have to foul in those situations and learn from the Chicago game. We're fortunate that they missed an open three. So they recognize, at least there's the recognition of, yeah, that's a spot.
It's a cardinal rule.
Yeah, I mean, we got to foul in that spot, especially against a team that is not that good offensively, not good at shooting and creating those shots.
They did the right thing by putting
up
a double.
Until you let Trey Jones get to the corner. Yeah.
Yeah.
You did the right thing doubling, pressuring, but at that point, then it's okay, now we foul.
Then you also have to release if there's a breakdown.
Yeah. And they did none of the above. And Trey Jones wide open in the corner, and that miss sealing the game. So the Bucks were certainly fortunate. It's a learning experience all across the board, but what we kind of said, I do really think, look, there's things to clean up, but I do think this was more a case of the Spurs played pretty well versus, man, the Bucks looked pretty bad tonight to be hanging around with the San Antonio Spurs or letting the Spurs hang around with them. And that was kind of the tone from Adrian Griffin as well. Overall, a lot of positives that came from this. And you know, I said too, I don't know if you could call it a must-win game because it's January and it's very, very early January, but like the way you looked, especially in that last game against the Pacers, but in the last six quarters, basically, you had to win. You couldn't get to the point where it's a three-game losing streak and now you're headed to Houston and it's a Rockets team that have been going through some struggles of late, but it's a much better team under Ime Udoka. Then who knows if this thing extends to four games. And then you're coming home, and while it is a four-game homestand, outside of the Utah Jazz, those are some pretty challenging opponents on paper. I mean, Utah is going to be a challenge as well. But the Kings, the Warriors, who knows? Maybe with the latest update we had about Draymond Green, maybe he's back for that game. And the Boston Celtics, certainly the biggest one. So you did need to get a win, or really, really wanted it. And that's what Adrian Griffin basically said of, you know, coming off of those last two games. We really wanted this win. And they got it. And credit to Damian Lillard for the way that he played down the stretch in the fourth quarter. And to certainly credit to Giannis as well for the performance that he had tonight. 855-616-1620, the old National Bank talk and a text line to join us on Bucks Talk. Let's squeeze in one more call here. James on the South Side.
Yeah, it was a nice win, but you know, if we would have lost that to an inferior team, that would have really, I think, would have really played with our psyche a lot. The thing I was going to ask was, if the guy that's injured right now comes on back and we can't, we really can't do anything, you know, get him back in and things don't work out or that, are we past the, what do you want to call the word, the trade deadline right now of getting another player or something like that?
The trade deadline's 5 or 6 weeks away, so they still have time there.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering, and who would we look for if we at the trade line?
Well, and thanks for the call tonight, James. We'll get into some more specific names as we move closer and as things start to become more apparent. And again, Jay Crowder is going to be a big piece of it when you see whenever it is you get him back and what version of Jay Crowder you get back. Because that's the biggest shame of all of this is. All of the work Jay Crowder put in the offseason, he looked fantastic to start the season. So to see him go down when he did was the unfortunate part. And now it's, you know, what does he look like when he comes back and how long until he looks like the guy that he was when he exited with that untimely injury. We will wrap up the show and preview the final game on this road trip in Houston against the Rockets after this on Bucks Talk. 125-121, the final in San Antonio. The Bucks take down the Spurs. A little bit of issue with late game execution, but you're fortunate to come out of it with a win, largely due to Damian Lillard scoring 11 of his 25 in the fourth quarter. Giannis scoring 14 in that fourth. So he and Dame put up 25 of the Bucks' 32 points in those final 12 minutes. And overall, Giannis unstoppable tonight. 3 three-pointers, including 2 back-to-back threes that took the Bucks from down 3 to up 3. And he finished with a game-high 44 points. Another impressive showing on the same day where he was named the Eastern Conference Player of the Month for December. Now you look to see if you can make this a winning road trip. As you wrap things up, Saturday night in Houston against the Rockets, that is a 7 o'clock tip-off. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage with myself and Dave Kane begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk to you Saturday night after the Bucks and the Rockets.